Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Blog Talk Radio show, Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me right now, we have Gordon Glantz and Josh Landsberg, I believe, is joining us. Lots to talk about this week, so we're not going to waste any time. We're going to get right to it. And that is, we'll start with the Philadelphia Phillies, because the pitchers and catchers reported this past week. And tomorrow, all the position players are supposed to have reported. So we'll be realistic. We're not looking for records yet. And you know, obviously they're not going to be a contender this year. But it looks like they have turned the page. And you see a lot of new faces, a lot of new names. So Gordon Glantz, start us off. What storyline should we be looking? Give me one or two things that people might watch for in spring training this year.
Well, a list came out this week, and it was really encouraging. I mean, we knew that they acquired some good prospects and some of the deals they made last year, which was really the overriding thing, overriding elephant in the room, even when training camp started last year, was you knew a lot of the guys, the veterans, were probably not going to be on the team by the trading deadline, and they weren't. For the most part. I still don't know why they didn't trade Francoeur, but and who they would get. That was who they would get back, and could that really replenish the farm system? And I believe they had more guys in the top 100 of this one list. I don't know if it was Baseball America. I think it was somebody else's list. I think they had 7 or 8 guys, prospects in there, and a good portion of them, except for Crawford, who was rated the highest, I think he was in the top 10, a good portion of those guys were people they acquired in some of the deals that they made, most importantly, the Hamels trade. So, you know, I don't know how many of those players are realistically going to be on the roster when the season begins. Probably none of them, but they're probably going to get significant playing time in the spring training games, and I'd like to see how some of those guys perform. So that's obviously one thing. And the pitching staff, obviously, they don't even have a set closer after trading away Ken Giles, and they don't. Beyond Aaron Nola and possibly Eichhoff, we don't really know how the rotation's going to fall. So, a lot of guys are going to get a lot of chances to throw and innings and compete for jobs, which I think is healthy. So I think obviously those are two areas that I'm really looking for. Again, we're kind of starting a season knowing that they're going to be cellar dwellers, but at least they're cellar dwellers with they can see a light through the corner of the cellar door.
Yeah, I don't know. The Braves are pretty bad. They might have some company down there. They might have co-tenants down in the cellar. But good points, Gordon. That the pitching staff certainly to watch. See who's in there, right? And some of the most interesting guys to watch, like you said, might be guys who aren't going to start the season with the Phillies and maybe not even make it up all season long. You know, although you could see guys like Crawford by mid-season, somewhere in June, July. But some of the interesting guys to watch are guys we don't expect to make the 25-man roster because you're not going to bring a guy, a hot prospect, up here and have him sit on the bench as a backup. Josh Landsberg with us. Josh, how about you? What are some things we should watch for during spring training?
Well, I think Gordon hit on some of the good points. I think definitely the pitchers. You have a good article up on PhillyFanatics.com about how many pitchers they have on this team. It's unbelievable the amount of pitchers that they acquired, minor league signings, veterans, guys that they brought in. In the offseason, the new general manager has brought in a lot of pitchers to this team. So I think that it's one of those things you got to watch. They have a lot of young players on this team, a lot of young pitchers. And some of the interesting storylines are guys will make the team. There's a lot of guys competing for positions. How's the starting rotation going to pan out? How's the relief pitching going to pan out? So I think really the storyline is the pitching, and pitching wins games. Pitching and defense wins games. It's not always the offense. So we saw that with the Kansas City Royals. They have a great bullpen and a great defensive players and great pitching all around. The Kansas City Royals won the World Series with pitching and defense and timely hitting also, obviously, accounting for that. But they weren't, the greatest offensive team. They had great pitching and great defense. So I think that that's what wins in baseball, and I think that the Phillies are trying to build around that, trying to get some good pitchers. They acquired 5 pitchers in a trade. They acquired in the Ken Giles trade, they acquired 5 pitchers in that deal. So they have a lot of guys that they're looking at, and I think that's the storyline. It's the pitchers, how are the pitchers going to pan out, what pitchers are going to make this team, what pitchers are going to be down in the minor leagues to start the season potentially, be brought up midway through the season. So I think those are some of the storylines to watch. Aaron Nola, obviously, being one of the key guys in this rotation, he's the guy that you got to watch throughout the season.
Yeah, I think
one more thing, Eric. I'd like to bring
up.
Eric, I'd like to bring up also. I mean, they have the first pick in the draft in June, and that opportunity doesn't come along that often. And while there's no Steven Strasburg type guy, you know, I think there's, you know, it's still an opportunity to really, you know, that they're going to be judged a lot by who they take and who they don't take, and you know, that's going to be another storyline to watch when June comes around.
Yeah. I just want to follow up on what Josh said. You're right, Gordon. That's something we'll watch when we get to June. Josh brought up all the pitchers, and thank you, Josh, for plugging my article on PhillyConnects.com up in arms. I appreciate that. But, you know, there was a quote I didn't have in there, and Matt Klentak, the general manager, talked about something. He referred to it as a wave of pitchers or something along those lines. And basically they've gotten, like you said, five guys in one deal, in a Ken Giles deal. They get five pitchers back, and it's as if they're just trying to, you know, get as many as they can and hope some of them work out. It, you know, some of them, it reminds me, I don't mean this in a bad way, but it reminds me of the Eagles off season where every guy they pick up, you know, they're getting, you know, for maybe less than their potential because the guy either has been a disappointment or is coming off a major injury. You know, for the Eagles, it was ACL injuries. For here, it's baseball, it's pitchers with shoulder injuries or elbow injuries, Tommy John surgery. It seems like they picked up a lot of those guys and just hope some of them work out. You know, like I said, you never could have gotten these guys at full value. Like someone like Mark Appel was the number one pick in the draft, you know, not that long ago. But it's been such a disappointment in the minors that, you know, they're hoping they can get something out of them. And if they don't, they didn't get, you know, hey, you didn't give up a ton to get them. I mean, give up one big guy in Hamels and one big guy in and Deakman with that, and you gave up Giles in that trade. But not a, you know, not for five guys. It's not a bad return. And if a couple of them work out, hey, the better. I also think it's going to be interesting to watch some of the veterans, a guy like Ryan Howard, and see where he falls in, see if Darren Ruff gets more playing time. And I think the other guys to watch, although spring training can be misleading, are the second-year guys, the guys who looked really good last year, Aaron Nola, Odubel Herrera, you know, Michael Franco, and see, you know, will these guys continue their upward swing, their improvement, or will they – you know, level off, or maybe in the case, you know, was Herrera a flash in the pan? You know, is Nolan not a number one starter? Is he more of a two or three guy? We'll see. But there's a lot of interest in the Phillies, which is strange. We haven't had that for a while, so at least we have some things to talk about with the Phillies. All right, let's switch to the Eagles. And, you know, and if you're following the news, you're going to know that the guy, first guy I call on here, is not available until after the NFL draft, and that is Gordon Glantz. Gordon, Eagles have it till March 1st to franchise Sam Bradford. Should they do it? I mean, obviously, you try to work out a long-term deal. Should they bring him back? And if they can't work out a long-term deal, should they franchise him, or is it time to move on?
I'd rather see him here than not here, but I don't think they can afford to pay, you know, some of the salary figures that are being thrown out there, like $25, $26 million a year. That would just really kind of put them in a bind, you know, in terms of the cap, because you know they brought back Vinny Curry, they brought back Zach Ertz. I mean, they, you know, I don't think cutting Riley Cooper is really going to offset that in the overall cap. So, if they can get him in the teens, $16 million, $18 million, something like that, which would really be dictated by what, you know, his interest around the league. Is there much interest in him around the league or not? And it only takes one team to kind of pay him what he's looking for, and if another team out there wants to do that, I think they would have to part ways and move on to another, you know, to a plan B. But I think they should keep the lines of communication open. I think they should. I think they're saying the right things by saying we want him back. I think that's part of the waltz. I think they have to say that, whether they're 100% sincere or not. If anything, it drives the price up for another team to know they're competing with the Eagles. But they do have to kind of have a number in mind that they don't want to go above. And if franchising him means they're going above that number that they have in mind, knowing who they may want to go after also in free agency and who else they might want to retain. I mean, we know they're going to try to bring, you know, extend Fletcher Cox for sure. You know, I think there has to be a limit to it. So, you know, this is really the curse of Chip Kelly, because he kind of brought Sam Bradford here knowing this was going to be the story this year. And and now Chip Kelly's gone, and, you know, the Eagles have to kind of deal with the Sam Bradford situation, and if not, you're going to be looking at a very unsettled quarterback scenario. So it's really, and they really can't make any other moves until they know what they're going to do there. So it bears watching, and, you know, I ultimately it's out of their hands because he can sign with somebody else. But, you know, I think they still have to stick to their guns. They can't really break the bank for a guy. I think his skills are there. I'm one of the people. I'm not one of the people who thinks he's not a good quarterback. I think he can be a good quarterback in the right system, but to really dump that much money in a guy who has a kind of injury history makes me really nervous. So,
not even a one-year franchise.
The one-year franchise again. I would have to know, you know, what the price tag would be on that, and if it's a price tag they can live with who else they're planning on targeting in free agency. So for a while I was fine with that, but I don't know if you're really long-term. I mean, new coach, and you're really trying to look at a five-year plan just to sign a guy to one-year franchise for 1 year, if that's really pointing you in the right direction. So if he's leaving, they're probably going to bring in a placeholder guy, you know, maybe a Chase Daniel, or they have Mark Sanchez already in place, or there's been even some talk about bringing Nick Foles back, a placeholder-type guy, and probably draft a young guy to, become the eventual starter here. And that's fine, but they really need to have that plan in place pretty soon. So I don't know. I like the idea originally, but it's becoming less palatable for me just to bring them back here for a year at a high figure when they could address it other ways, address the money other ways. So I don't really know.
Okay. Fair enough. And, you know, Bradford made this decision with his play during the second half of the season. I mean, certainly if we had gone by what he did the first part of the season, first half, nobody would have been – we'd be talking about re-signing him. But it was his play during the second half, especially with the Eagles, I'll say, subpar receiving core, that made you think, well, you know, maybe this guy's good enough. You know, maybe he's worth the money. Again, you're right, it's maybe, maybe not. And his injury history certainly scares you off a long-term deal at big money. But – he played well enough that you got to, you know, some people say, well, you know, he's a lot better than their other options. Josh, let me move on to you, and this will probably tie into a column I'm writing this week. I'll mix it in with the Eagles, Flyers, and Sixers here. But if they don't bring back Sam Bradford and they go to, whether they bring in Chase Daniel, like Gordon mentioned, or they stick with Mark Sanchez or whatever, what message does that send to the rest of the team, all these guys that they've re-signed for big money and talking about the future? What message does it send if they, you know, don't go with the best quarterback available because of money and they settle for a Mark Sanchez or, like, you know, a free agent guy they pick up?
Well, I think it sends a message that they're rebuilding. I think that it sends that message that they're not ready to win right away. They're not ready to win right now. And they're a rebuilding team. They're going to have a kind of a placeholder guy that's in there like a Mark Sanchez, as Gordon mentioned, or a Chase Daniels or someone like that can kind of hold down the fort for 1 year and have another bad season and maybe draft a guy this year or next year to be the future quarterback. But I think they really got to re-sign Sam Bradford. I don't think they have a choice. I think that, hopefully it's not such a huge number, but if they can get like a five-year, $80 million deal, something like that, $60 million a year, or, you know, some kind of bonus up front, where he gets like a $20 million signing bonus and then his contract is a little bit less. I'm not sure how much interest there is around the league. Quarterbacks are always a high commodity, so there are teams looking. You know, the Texans are a team that could be looking for a quarterback, so they could have some interest in Sam Bradford, and he certainly had a great second half of the season, as you mentioned, but I think they have no choice but to re-sign him. I think it sends a message that they're a rebuilding team. They're not ready to win right now, but if they re-sign Sam Bradford, it sends a message to their young players and this the core of the team. But they are ready to win right now. They have a new coach in place. They're going to sign some guys in free agency. They're going to hopefully have a good draft. And they're going to try to not, you know, turn it around right away and go after the division next year. So I think that I think they have to re-sign Sam Bradford, and I think that it sends a bad message if they don't.
Of course, the NFC East is eminently winnable, but whether that means anything or not, you know, is a question. Gordon,
I really think he's Plan A, Eric. But how committed they are to Plan A is really the thing that you know, until I get hired in that role, you know, to be the extra guy that they're looking for in the PR in the personnel department, I wouldn't really know what they're thinking behind closed doors. But you know, I think in a perfect world, I think they'd like to get him back at the right price. But how committed they are to really kind of, you know, get into negotiating more with other teams is really going to be the issue.
Your name has come up, hasn't it, in that search?
Adam Schefter did float it out there, so we'll have to see what happens.
we'll see if you can go along with Howie. Maybe you guys can have lunch next week or something. Gordon, just taking your scenario one step further, the Howie Roseman, of course, I'm referring to. Take it one step further. If they don't re-sign him, I asked Josh when, you know, what that would mean to the other players and the message it would send, but also for you, how would it affect their decision-making? It's a domino effect. If they don't sign Sam Bradford and they go to more of a, like you said, placeholder quarterback or a, you know, a stopgap quarterback, then decision-making, do you bring back Jason Peters? Do you bring back D'Amico Ryans? You know, if you're not going to really contend with a quarterback this year, do you start letting some of these veterans go? What's the point of bringing them back at big money especially?
Yeah, I guess I would have to evaluate each guy. I don't know if you could say across the board all the veterans would go. I would tend to think that Ryans is pretty much gone. And Peters, they probably would, you know, try to get one more year out of him. Of course, now that I said that, they'll probably do the complete opposite. But, yeah, you know, it really this is kind of holding up everything. You know, and that's, you know, thanks again, Chip Kelly. We can, you know, send you a postcard and thanks again for really kind of, you know, if they had, you know, I don't know if they wouldn't have made the playoffs if they had kept Nick Foles probably anyway, and they wouldn't be in this situation right now. So even though, you know, Bradford played pretty well, he, you know, considering he completed like 65% of his passes and it was a franchise record, and that was with leading the league in drops. You know, so I mean, imagine he, you know, he would have been up near 70% if he had all the drops that he had. But they were still a team that had so many other problems, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I don't really know if the two things equate. I think that they would feel, you know, football guys are very arrogant. I think they would probably feel that they would have another plan that would work and that they could win with, and that it wouldn't necessarily be the case. It would be, you know, from outsiders, we would say, oh, they're just going to have a rebuilding year. But I think they would feel like, you know, Chase Daniel knows my system, and if we draft a guy, you know, there's a couple quarterbacks who at least one would still be there when they go at 13. Maybe two would be there when they pick at 13. But again, now because of the situation with Bradford, it's dictating where you go in the first round when there's other needs. So, but I think they would kind of feel like they're setting themselves up pretty well at quarterback. So, you know, and they probably feel with Jim Schwartz that their defense is going to be the one. Defense and special teams are going to be how they win games this next year anyway, and run the ball and be kind of conservative on offense. So I don't know. They would probably feel, and as a lot of football people, you know, when you talk to them, they all feel that they got a chance to win when you're in this time of the year. So I don't really know if they would see it as rebuilding as much as we would from the outside.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another team with personnel issues, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers. And the trade deadline passed, sort of, and the Sixers made one minor deal where they sent, and I'm going to do my best on this, they sent the rights to Chuk Wadabir Madwabam, who's a Nigerian player, I believe, who they acquired from the Denver Nuggets last year at the trade deadline, sent him to the Rockets for veteran center Joel Anthony, who's only played 13 games this year, and, of course, the coveted second-round draft pick that Sam Hinkie gets. That trade, by the way, it has not been completed yet. It was a three-team deal with the Pistons, and there's some health issues with one of the players regarding back problems. The trade deadline has been extended till tomorrow at 6 o'clock to see if that deal goes through. But either way, I think that trade is less interesting than the fact that there are reports that the – and it seems to be substantial reports, not pie-in-the-sky, you know, throw-it-over-the-wall reports – that the Sixers were involved in a three-team deal or discussions of a three-team deal with the Celtics and the Nets, or the other team who had an unprotected first-round pick, and the Nets are pretty bad, that would have sent Jahlil Okafor to Boston. Josh, what do you make of the fact that they even had this discussion about trading Jahlil Okafor?
Well, it's very interesting, very, very interesting that they were thinking about doing this move. And it proves, you know, maybe they were listening to our show. It proves what we were talking about, that they maybe think the same thing that we think, that Jahlil Okafor and Nerlens Noel can't play together. And you know, I thought if they had to move one of them, they should move Noel over Okafor. But it looks like they were thinking about moving Okafor and keeping Noel. And I'm not sure what they were going to get in return in that deal. Maybe they were looking to get a guard or a forward, but you know, of course, they have Joel Embiid potentially coming back next year, and they have Saric potentially coming next year from overseas. So they have a lot of big men. They have a lot of big men on their team, and they're kind of you know, overloaded with big men. And maybe they were looking to get some more guards in here, or forward, small forward in here for that type of deal. But I'm a little bit surprised by it. I would think that Noel would be the guy that they would move more than Okafor. But not totally surprised, because it's proven time and time again throughout the year that these two have had trouble playing together, and they play better when they're not on the floor at the same time. And so it's an interesting move that they're trying to make, and it seems like the Sixers were really willing to do it from the report, and it was held up by the third team in the deal, that the Sixers and the Celtics were on board, and the third team in the deal kind of held it up. So this move very well could have gone through if that third team didn't hold it up, and we could have seen Jahlil Okafor out of here. As it is, he's here, and it's always interesting how a player reacts to that. You know, you probably heard the rumors that he was involved in the trade, and how he reacts to that will be interesting to see the rest of the season going forward.
Yeah, he said as well, it's just a rumor and whatever, but Josh, I think you're right. It's not entirely clear, but we know the Celtics were on board. That's the team we know was on board, and it's not clear if the Sixers or the third team, like you said, which appears to be the Nets, are the ones that backed out. Gordon, let's just for a second, let's assume that the Sixers were getting the Celtics get Okafor, the Sixers get that unprotected pick from the Nets, which looks like it's going to be a pretty high draft pick, you know, and probably you know, a player or two from the Celtics would be my guess, and somebody goes to the Nets also. But the Sixers, let's say the Sixers come out with that draft pick, that first round unprotected pick, and you know, and a veteran or a player of some sort who can contribute. Here's my question, where you have to speculate here. I know it's pure speculation, but if Jerry Colangelo was not part of this franchise, do you think Sam Hinkie makes that deal, or do you think it was, you know, Colangelo who put the brakes on it?
Well, I certainly think Colangelo thought it through a little more. I think Hinkie would have been more tempted by it. You know, Hinkie's one of those guys, I think he sees a trade deadline. It's sort of like when a kid gets to go to, you know, when you go down the shore and you get to go to the amusement pier, he just can't really resist going on his favorite rides and coming away with, you know, everything that he has, cotton candy and everything else. So, yeah, I think Colangelo for sure, the fact that they didn't do it or anything else splashy, that shows his influence on the situation. I don't even know if Hinkie's really making many calls at all right now, but a couple thoughts. I mean, I think it should be illegal for the Sixers and Celtics to ever make a trade. I mean, these are rivals going back to the 60s. I mean, the 50s. The Sixers and the Celtics should not make trades and then, you know, have a guy haunt you for the next 10 years playing them, you know, how many times per year they play each other. So, you know, that just would have offended all my sensibilities going back to the Bird Doc days and the, I'm sure, older people with the Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell days. So, so just for that and that alone, I'm glad they didn't do it. And really, but really, in the present day, they have to get off this asset carousel where they just keep trading assets to get assets and getting new assets, and you're just going around in a circle. You're not going forward. You're not marching forward, you know, toward a goal. You're just kind of going around in a circle. You know, here's an asset, take another, you know, get back another asset, and keep going around and around. So, I'm glad they didn't do it. And I think a guy like Colangelo has, you know, enough both feet on the ground to realize that just it would not be a smart thing to do right now. There has to be a point in time where they have to kind of draw a line in the sand and say, these are the guys we're going to build around. And, you know, I really think in terms of, I know they're going to have a lot of big men if and when Embiid comes back healthy. And if Saric comes over, he's kind of a power forward. He can also play some small forward. If he comes over, you know, they're going to have to deal with that. But I think that was really a discussion to have next year at the trade deadline to see who's healthy and how the pieces fit. I really, it would have been a real premature move to do it this year. So I'm glad they didn't for a lot of reasons. I'm glad they didn't make a trade with the Celtics. I'm glad they didn't just kind of keep trading assets for new assets and not getting anywhere. And I really think Okafor, if he becomes more mature off the court, I think he has some special skills, and I think he is a guy you should be building around. So sometimes the moves you don't make are the best moves you make, and you know, I think that was the case here, and I'm kind of glad that there's a level head in the front office that is stopping Hinkie from himself.
You know, good points, Gordon. Yeah, Embiid, of course, which you mentioned, is Hinkie had a news conference, which was interesting that he even did that. That's a big change from the pre-Colangelo days. Joel Embiid is in Cotter, rehabbing right now in Cotter. Hinkie did say he expects him to be ready for next season, but said it's unlikely he will play in the summer league this year. So, you know, I'll believe when I see him. You know, in terms of when he's ready. But you're right, it's an interesting thing. Jerry Colangelo, one of the more overplayed stories, Gordon, this would play into your thing that maybe he's the one who put the brakes on this, and at some point the future's got to be now. You can't just keep trading asset for asset. There was a story last week which I thought was really overplayed that Colangelo says the Sixers are going to be contenders within 3 years, and that's because he's the first guy who's put a timetable on it. But, of course, Jerry Colangelo has a 3-year contract. So what do you expect him to say? You know, it'll be 5 years? I mean, and then he's going to be gone. You know, he's looking to do it while he's here, so I think that makes a lot of sense. So let's switch to another team.
I really think they can be. I mean, maybe I'm pie in the sky myself, but I really think they can be in 3 years with some of the guys they've collected. I mean, you're talking like top lottery picks. I really think they can be. So I don't think that's that outlandish, especially when it's 3 years.
I wasn't saying the 3 years is outlandish. I'm saying, of course, he's going to say that, though, because he's got a 3-year contract.
Right, yeah.
He's not going to say, it'll be good when I'm gone. That's not what he's looking to do. He's looking to make it good while he's still here. Let's switch to the Philadelphia Flyers, who have a trade deadline coming up on the 29th of February. And Josh, I'll ask you not so much specific players, but there are a couple points out of a playoff spot right now. They with the win last night, the overtime win in Toronto, Gostisbehere Spear with another big overtime goal. You know, Josh, do they owe it to the players who have gotten them to this point and to the fans to try to make a deal to make the playoffs, or should they stick to their guns and not trade any young players? Maybe if you're trying to load a contract, that's one thing. But should the young players be completely off limits, and that should be a higher priority than making the playoffs this year?
You know, I think it's a great question. It's a really tough call because they do have a lot of young talent down in the minors, and they do have a lot of young talent on their current team. And they're playing pretty well right now. They may make the playoffs anyway, even without a trade deadline move. So it's possible they could make the playoffs just by kind of standing pat and looking to build for the future, looking toward next year and the year after that. But, you know, as a fan, you always want to see a team go for it this year. So you want to see them make a move and try to get into the playoff picture better and really, you know, not just get into the playoffs, maybe make a little run in the playoffs. So it's I'm kind of torn on this question because you want to keep your young players and you don't want to give up too much, but you want to make the playoffs also. So you kind of, you know, got to leave it up to Ron Hextall to make the right decision. And, you know, I think that if they could make a trade where they don't give up too much and they get, you know, maybe a veteran in here that could help them for this playoff push the rest of the second half of the season, then it might be worth it. But you don't want to give up too much and not get enough back in return. So you kind of got to weigh that in your decision-making process.
Gordon, same question in 35 seconds. And I'll let you, after we go to the archives, I'll let you do some specific deals if you want. But making the playoffs this year versus the future.
Definitely the future. Like Josh said, if they find a way into the playoffs this year, great. You know, and that would be a nice thing for some of these guys to get some playoff experience. But I would sell, not buy at the deadline. I just don't think that would be a good move for really the game plan Hextall has set in place, the overall vision for the organization. I think it would kind of go against the grain of what he's already kind of set up. So I would look to sell some guys. I would not look to. You know, we can talk about that after the break, but I certainly wouldn't be out buying guys or renting guys, anything like that.
Yeah, they certainly don't want to do any rentals. That wouldn't make sense because it's not like they're going to win a cup this year, even if they do go to the playoffs. Well, you never can tell, but that would be highly unlikely, I would say. So we'll get to Gordon. We'll get to some specific deals maybe they could make. We'll do that after we switch into archives. I want to thank everybody for listening live. Please check out PhillyConnects.com. Some good stuff on there right now. Daytona 500 was today, so NASCAR preview is up. So if you want to read about beyond the Daytona 500, that's up. My fish and chips column's up. I'll have the Phillies. Phillies are up already, up in arms. We'll have Flyers notebooks, college stuff, all sorts of stuff coming this week. Check it out, PhillyConnects.com. Thank you for listening. All right, Gordon, let's shift now. So, who are some guys maybe the Flyers, if they were to make a deal, who are some guys that they would make available and that might bring something back?
Oh, I would I know we all like Mark Streit. Mark Streit's a pretty good player, but you know, with the way Gustav Spears playing, I think he kind of becomes, and also to a certain extent Medvedev even, he kind of becomes more expendable. And I really think a top 5 to 10 team, a team that really is a serious contender for the Cup, could really use a guy like Mark Streit. I mean, maybe if they need somebody on their second power play unit, for example, or, just another, guy in their, maybe be a third pairing guy, and also, like I said, their second power play unit. And I really think you could probably get, from one of those teams that would be, finishing pretty high in the standings, you would get like a low first round. He ended the first round for Mark Streit. I would be all over that trade. I know they like him in the locker room, and he's a good guy, and he's an assistant captain, but I think you would have to do that. And Nick Schultz is another guy. If you could get pretty good value for him, and a good value for Nick Schultz is maybe a third-round pick. I mean, you're talking about a guy, I believe they brought him in for nothing, correct? He was just a, like a veteran tryout kind of thing. So, to try and kind of turn that around value-wise into, a draft pick, even if it's like a third, fourth-round pick, I certainly would do it with Schultz. I think we would all do it for Umberger, even though he seems to be playing a little better. But, I mean, I don't think he could hit a soccer net sometimes, when he gets chances to score. But, if a team is really maybe looking to bolster their fourth line or something and are willing to give you, again, like I talked about with Schultz, some sort of mid-round pick for Umberger, I would do that. So, again, I'm not really naming guys who are vital. I guess if they traded Schultz and Streit, it would leave their defense a little thin. But, that would open up a possibility to bring up a guy like whether it's Samuel Morin or if you don't want to bring him up yet, Robert Hagg, it's his second year playing in the AHL, or Ault, who I think has been 2.5 years down there. They could bring somebody else up and give them a taste of the NHL for the rest of the season if they were to trade both Schultz and Streit. And if they had the opportunity to trade both those guys, I would do it. I wouldn't stop. If they were able to trade Streit and then they had another offer for Schultz, I wouldn't say, well, it's going to leave us too thin. I would obviously move both guys. And, they may get a call for a goalie. Who knows? And then I think they would have to really think about it. Whether they could, I know Mason gets hurt a lot. If somebody calls for Mason, would you be okay with just Neuwirth? Or would you be okay trading Neuwirth and have to ride it out with Mason, whether he stays healthy or not? So, he came out of the game last night, for example. So, but if a team really wants to give you pretty good value for a goalie, you'd think about it. But otherwise, I mean, the only young player that maybe I would think about is somebody we're willing to give you a couple of good prospects for like a Scott Laughton or something. But, any veteran they would get would have to be a veteran like we talked about. It's under contract who is not too old, under 30, still under contract for a couple of years and can contribute to this team down the road. So, and I'd be okay with that. I mean, Sam Gagner would be another guy I guess they'd like to get rid of. Again, I don't know how much value he'd have, but, anybody they can move for any kind of draft pick. Hextall has drafted extremely well the last couple of years, even in the middle rounds. I mean, I was looking at it the other day and how some of these guys are playing at whatever level they're playing in, whether it's juniors or Europe or college. A lot of his draft picks are doing, not that every guy's going to make it, but a lot of them are playing pretty well. So I'd be okay even with collecting some mid-round picks for some of these guys and creating some roster spots for some of the prospects they have coming. So, those are some of the deals I would look at.
And like you said, although their back end got a little thinner today, Michael Delzato, the wrist injury is going to require season-ending surgery later this week, so he's done for the year. But they still have an extra defenseman with Manning. And certainly Medvedev's contract's up, and I don't think he's coming back. So if anybody gave you anything for him, even if it's a fifth-round pick, he goes. Schultz, like you said, you might want a little more for. He's played pretty well. He has another year on contract. It's not that expensive. Streit, I agree with you 100%. You know, if they can get somebody to give them something of value back for him, because it gets his contract off the books also, which is at $5 million plus. Andrew McDonald, obviously, but he's in the Umberger category.
Yeah,
nobody's
right.
going to give you – nobody's going to take that contract. And I agree with you. The one young guy I would think about, Gordon, is the guy you said, Scott Laughton, because I think Nick Cousins has passed Scott Laughton at this point. And so, you know, if you can get Scott Laughton, if you have to throw him into the strike deal, you know, that I think about that if he gets you the right guy back. Let's move on to finals. So we'll see. We'll have next week if the Flyers have made any deals. I think we have still next week 24 hours to talk about before the trade deadline, and we'll see what happens. Josh,
maybe by then we'll have some rumors to really kick around, and maybe some solid rumors by then too. So.
That's right. But I think they're not going to be a big player. I think, you know, like you said, it's going to be a question if they can get a veteran out of here with a contract and get something back, but they're not going to make a big move for this year's playoffs. Josh, your final thought. You can start us off with final thoughts.
All right, I'm going to go to college basketball. Two good games on ESPN last night. Kentucky, Texas A&M went to overtime. Kentucky ranked 14th in the country. Texas A&M not ranked at all in the top 25. It was played at Texas A&M, so it was a home game for them, but it went to overtime, and they won on a last-second putback to win the game. So it was an exciting game to watch, back and forth, Kentucky and Texas A&M, a good rivalry. And then another rivalry game, my alma mater, Indiana Hoosiers, played against the Purdue Boilermakers in one of the best rivalries in all sports. Indiana and Purdue, they hate each other, and it's a great rivalry. It goes back, you know, many, many years. And that was a game that was also interesting. The Hoosiers had a big lead in that game. They were winning most of the game. They got out to like a 15-point-plus lead. And then the Boilermakers made a run at the end of the game, got it to within 2 points. And it got really scary and nervous for IU fans. And Yogi Ferrell, the senior leader of that team, came down the court and made a play. And it was a goaltending call. He went up for a layup in goaltending. And the Hoosiers went up by four and ended up winning by four. So two good games on ESPN, college basketball, fun to watch. It's a good time of the year. We're getting close to March Madness. It's right around the corner, and it's good to see those rivalry games. And Indiana, I believe, was ranked 22nd before last night's game, and Purdue was ranked 17th. The game was played at Assembly Hall in Indiana, so they had the home court advantage, but they were five spots behind Purdue in the rankings. So it was a good win for Indiana, and now they're 17-2 against ranked opponents at home at Assembly Hall in the last few years. So really good record against ranked opponents at Assembly Hall.
Yeah, college basketball definitely heating up. There's been some great games locally and nationally in the past week. Gordon, your final thought?
Yeah, my daughter, you have to follow me here because this is sports related. My daughter goes to a private school and they wear uniforms, so I don't get to see a lot of her classmates and schoolmates in kind of a natural habitat, but they had their bingo night this week. And so, you know, we went there and it's very noisy and hectic and crowded, but you also get to see a lot of the kids dress like they do normally. And you know, we discuss a lot on the show the state of Philadelphia sports. And what, you know, and a lot, we have a lot of teams in this city asking us to be patient, and I think you know, the fans have pretty much, surprisingly, except for Eagles fans, been somewhat patient. You know, they're willing to wait on the Flyers, willing to wait on the Sixers for, you know, like we're talking about, you know, 3 years maybe, and we're willing to wait on the Phillies. And you know, I think the upshot of that is what I saw around that room on bingo night around the gymnasium where they had it. You know, I saw kids in Denver Broncos jerseys. I saw kids even in New York Giants jerseys. I saw a lot of Golden State Warriors jerseys. New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox, and you can go down the list. I saw hardly any. You see occasional Eagles. That's about it. Anything else? I mean, it's really, you would probably think you weren't in Philadelphia if you looked at the boys that were, you know, in that room wearing different shirts that they wore to bingo night. So it makes you wonder and worry a little bit about the next generation. I mean, you're asking adults like us to be patient, but these are really, you know, pro sports are adults playing kids' games. And if the next generation is kind of tuning out the local teams, you know, because they're not winning and they're not really, you know, because they're not winning, they're not really exciting to watch, it kind of makes you wonder if they're losing fans in the next generation. So that thought kind of occurred to me there. And I know, you know, we can talk about analytics and the practicality of waiting and storing up prospects and picks and everything else. But, you know, there is another side to it. And it kind of hit me the other night.
Gordon, if it'll make you feel better, a student in my class this week was wearing a Got to Spare T-shirt. If that makes you feel better.
Well, I think you'll see a lot of those. I think you'll see a lot of those.
Yeah.
I might even get one.
Which leads me into my final thought. First, I want to mention top-ranked team in the country, Josh Brittle College Basketball, is the Villanova Wildcats. And they won a big game against Temple this past Wednesday, which hurts Temple somewhat, who has a big game tonight at Houston. And then they won against Butler on Saturday, which was a big game. But truly their big game comes up this Wednesday when they play 8th-ranked Xavier on the road. And that game is, if Villanova is going to stay number one into the playoffs, into the NCAA tournament, and get a number one ranking, obviously they have to win the conference tournament or at least get to the final. But the big game to stay at number one this week will be when they go play on the road at Xavier, 8th-ranked team in the country. That's a huge game. I also want to give a little plug for the Daytona 500. We don't talk a lot of NASCAR here. I do have my NASCAR preview up on PhillyFanatics.com. The Denny Hamlin won today by 0.01 seconds in the closest finish in the history of the Daytona 500. It was an unbelievable finish, edging Martin Truex Jr. And Hamlin went from fourth to first on the final lap. Really remarkable finish and in a photo finish. It was a true photo finish. But really, I wanted to talk about Shane Gostisbehere. And Gordon, you gave me a nice transition into that. And this guy is just incredible. And if you haven't been paying too close attention, you got to start watching him. He is just unbelievable. He's a rookie. He still has some things in his own end that he's got to struggle with a little bit. People have started to hit him more legally and illegally. He's not that big. And they're starting to, the fact that they're targeting him with some illegal hits tells me that other teams are worried about him. He's just so good with the puck. He makes such great decisions. Even sometimes when he doesn't get an assist, he gets the puck out of the zone well, moves it up. Yesterday in overtime, he sees Voracek moving up the right wing where he had a fight past some checkers, and Gostisbehere just takes off. Just an instinct you can't teach, and gets up on the play and gets the pass from Voracek and scores the winning goal. I believe every one of his goals, every single one, has either put the Flyers ahead or tied the game. So it's a lead-changing goal one way or another, every single one of them. So he's racking up points. His streak now is 15 games. That is the longest streak for a rookie defenseman in NHL history. It's just an unbelievable number. Obviously, the Flyers' record for any rookie consecutive games with a point. And this guy's something special. And people should start, I think people already have, but if you haven't, start watching this guy play. He is a special talent. He's a terrific player, and he's the type of player the Flyers really need, a guy on the back line who can move the puck out of his own zone, who can jump up into play, and he has a chance to be, you don't want to put too much pressure on him in his first year, but he really does have a chance to be one of the Flyers' best defensemen they've ever had. So Shane Gostisbehere, thank you. He's been a tremendous bright spot in this season. That's it for this week's show. For Gordon Glantz and Josh Landsberg, I want to say thank you. You guys did a great job. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. I already told you some of the things on the site. We're going to have my column up this week about personnel moves. We're going to have a Flyers column, notebook focusing on Shane Gostisbehere and the trade deadline. If you're a WWE fan, there's still the Fast Lane preview for tonight's show. It's up there as well. And we'll have Sixers notebooks, all sorts of stuff. And who knows what's going to happen this week with Sam Bradford and the Eagles situation, so there could be a lot more news. So please check out the site. Thank you for listening again. I am Eric Fisher for Gordon Glantz and Josh Landsberg. Good night. Have a great week.